Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Professor Adrian Daub about the recent elections in Germany, where we saw a surge in votes for the far-right AfD party, which is now the second most powerful party in the country. We discuss the significance of this rise in popularity and the ways the elections reveal a number of shifts in German politics as the various parties stake out positions which align with not just a center-right orientation, but more dangerously, a far-right one. We speak of the parallels to the recent election of Donald Trump to the U.S. presidency and what it says about the entrenchment of both neoliberalism and a faux populism based on xenophobia and not on serving the actual material interests of everyday people. We hope you enjoy this and other episodes. Please help support Speaking Out of Place by subscribing via our website, speakingoutofplace.com, following us on Instagram, and following me on Blue Sky. You can give me your feedback and suggest people to invite and topics to cover. Speaking Out of Place is produced in collaboration with The Creative Process and is made with support from Stanford University. I alone am responsible for its content. Adrian, thank you so much for being on to talk about the German elections. I do France, I do the UK to some degree, but Germany to me is a cipher. And since you do Hollywood, you probably know this reference. There's this financial crime, Wall Street drama, and Jeremy Irons is in it, and he plays like the chief.
Margin Call.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
That all rings a bell. Obviously, it's memorable to me for one particular line when the person who's figured out the whole thing's going to crumble is this young junior, whatever. But he's convinced them we need to get to talk to all the bigwigs. And so Jeremy Irons flies in his Learjet and turns to the young man and says, "So, explain it to me as if you were explaining it to a young child."
Yeah, I remember that line. Yeah, that is Margin Call. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, Adrian, can you give us like a thumbnail view of what happened and what you think the significance might be in terms of the near future and maybe the not so near future in Germany?
Yeah, I should say it is confusing. It's probably the most confusing election of my lifetime. There's some sort of a 10,000 foot view, and then there's a sort of 30,000 foot view. The 10,000 foot view is that it was a fairly unpopular government and a government that didn't really see eye to eye on anything, but had really been brought together by the results of the last election in 2021, I believe, that fell apart in the fall. And that is already significant. The German constitution is set up not to let governments fall apart that easily. A lot of the German basic law is basically a Weimar avoidance machine. So everything is basically, if you're trying to figure out why is it set up this way, it's like to avoid Weimar. Meaning this isn't an easy thing to crash a government in Germany, unlike in, let's say, Italy, where they seem to just do it from time to time. And it's just understood that's how it works. And part of what has been destabilizing the system in recent years is the rise of the AfD, of the far right, because there had been, and there still is, for all intents and purposes, an agreement among the non-far right parties that they will not, under any circumstances, enter any coalitions with them. Germany always has to have coalition governments, meaning it's very easy to keep a party out of power if you do it out of principle. The problem is it takes those votes in parliament basically off the table. Any majority you cobble together cannot include these people. And that has meant over the last 10 years, really, that forming these governments has become progressively more difficult. And it basically keeps bringing together, this is a little bit like what happens in France, it brings together all these parties that really don't see eye to eye, except that they're still opposed to the far right, who then all give up way too much of their own profile and get punished by the voters for it. And that's exactly what happened with this government. It was the three parties. It was the SPD of now former Chancellor Olaf Scholz, so a Social Democratic Party that you may recall moved into a sort of more neoliberal direction and split apart in the early 2000s and early aughts. And with Scholz, moved even further to the right. So it's really, I would say, the right wing of the Democratic Party with a couple of lefty admixtures. They're curiously nice to Russia, that sort of thing, but largely they are, I would say, centrist social democrats. The second partner was the Green Party, former new lefties who have also moved to the center, but retain a kind of an investment in lefty causes tend to be pretty uncomfortable with war, tend to be pretty comfortable with weed, tend to be pretty comfortable with diversity, and tend to be pretty committed to anti-racism. Not a full rightward drift, but certainly more centrist than they were when they first entered German parliament. Third party in this coalition was the liberal FDP. So these are people who started out in the immediate post-war as a free market and free people kind of party, libertarian plus civil liberties. Yeah. And they've very charmingly forgotten about the civil liberties part and now just do the libertarian shit. Mm. So you can imagine that these three together, nothing really held them together. And the coalition broke apart in the fall with Scholz firing basically the head of the FDP, which everyone knew would trigger a new election. And this is what we got. Had to call a snap election because the government as it then was constituted with the Greens and the SPD no longer had a majority, which is not acceptable under the German constitution. So that was the situation. It was a foregone conclusion that basically the other big party, and I'm putting an asterisk here because the SPD is no longer one of the big parties now, the CDU, the Christian Democratic Union, would be basically the ones taking on the mantle of the chancellorship after this. And this is exactly what happened. On Sunday, that party got 28.5% of the vote. That's not stellar, but it was enough. Basically, the party that has the most votes has an implicit charge, right? We don't have a queen or a king who says, like, you are now being told to form a government. Basically, the party with the largest percentage of votes will take that prerogative for itself and make at least a go of it. So it was always clear that it was going to be the CDU. But there were two big questions. One was, how big was this win going to be? Right? How unpopular was this sitting government? And once they got in, it was also pretty clear that they would not be able to run the government by themselves. That hasn't happened since the 1960s. Who are they going to go into a coalition? And that was a big question. And one of the kind of scary questions that hung over this whole thing was the CDU, under its chairman, Friedrich Merz, ran a pretty far-right curious campaign, let's say.
Yeah.
They thought of it as, we're stealing some of these issues back from the AfD. And hopefully we'll steal some voters from them too. What it ended up being like was basically what it always is in Europe. They were just basically playing on the AfD's side of the field, immigration, closed borders, crime, et cetera, and expecting somehow that this was going to buoy their electoral fortunes and not those of the AfD. You saw the headlines as to how that turned out. But the bigger and scarier question behind that campaign was, is this a head fake? Are they not sincere about this? Or does this mean that really the most logical coalition in their mind is with the AfD? And this would be an absolutely unprecedented break with an absolute taboo of post-war German history. You're not even supposed to pass a law with these people if you depend on their votes. Now it would be something more akin to a coalition. And they always said they weren't going to, but every time it came to describing how they saw the post-election landscape, they were like, our main enemy is the Greens. And everyone was like, well, so it's not the Nazis. Okay, that's weird. And so the scary dynamic of the campaign was that almost all the parties moved somewhat to the right, played somewhat on the AfD's turf, but the CDU, which was almost always foregone to be the victor of this election, in a way that almost made it sound like, hey, we could see ourselves governing with these people. And that, of course, would be absolutely terrifying.
You know, as you were speaking, I was gravitating toward my last question, which we'll get to in the last, but comparing it to the United States elections, right? The resonances are. So let me ask you a two-part question. We have the AfD, huge bump in popularity. We have these other parties positioning themselves, barring some of the rhetoric, some of the policy gestures, at least, right? A, what caused this explosion of popularity? Was it the strength of their message or a power vacuum or ideology vacuum or both? And then how much of a centering force are they in terms of pulling people into their orbit? Or is this all just cynical politics and people will make finer tuned calculations in the next several months, let's say?
I think a lot of this is cynical, but unfortunately, it has a dynamism of its own. That is to say, if you hooked someone up to a lie detector, I think they'd be like, we don't really believe a whole lot of this stuff. in the end, it has a dynamism of its own. And I think that's the scary part. That in many ways, they do not fully understand what they're unleashing. There are a couple of things going on. I'll start with maybe the boring and least scary aspect of this, which is when I was born, there were three major German political parties. And basically, they got into coalitions together in various ways, and that was it. Again, a lesson from the Weimar period, where there had been hundreds, dozens of parties at least. By the time I was able to vote, there were five. And in Sunday's election, it was like something like eight or nine that really had a plausible claim that they might be in parliament. And part of this is younger Germans switch who they vote for more readily than their elders. There used to be what were called the popular parties, really people's parties. The SPD on the left and the CDU on the right. The SPD was basically all your buddies from the union who would all go together and vote for the SPD on Sunday, and then they'd get drunk at their bar. And the CDU would all go to church together, vote together, and then go to their bar. And these parties ran up something like, sometimes they could have a out-and-out majority, but in most cases, they had something like 35 to 40% of the vote if they won an election, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning they were these massive bases, and they were almost like American political parties in that they were these massive coalitions bringing together people who were very different. Yeah. Rhenish capitalist with a liberal streak, but also like to go to church. Catholics who have a real social conscience, all in one party. And they wouldn't agree on everything. There were wings and there were fights. But basically, both of these parties are now shadows of their former selves. They have broken apart. And with every passing election, this gets worse because it's an age thing. If you look at the voter bloc above 70 in Sunday's election, I don't have the numbers on me right now, but I think something like 40% of them still voted for the CDU, right? And given the overall numbers that you can tell, that means that everyone else is just running for something else, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning this kind of stability not only is a thing of the past, the instability is increasing, basically. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always have to be a bad thing, but it does seem to privilege populist campaigns. Mm-hmm. Mostly from the right, but also some from the left. And we can talk mm-hmm. about that, which is fine as far as it goes. But German politics for a long, long time was just like a super boring affair because it was these two vast bureaucracies that were like, look, we can't get too crazy with this. We'll lower taxes or raise taxes. We'll do this or that. But by now, right, like it's gotten just a lot more cartoonish because you have to punch through this new media ecosystem and you have to compete with all these other stakeholders. So that's one thing that's happened. The other thing that's happened is that very clearly Germany is grappling with demographic change in interesting ways and in very troubling ways. And that is to say that more and more parties seem to fall back on this kind of what we would call white identity politics. They mm-hmm. don't call it that. They would be very offended if you called it that. Because identity politics is only something brown people do to them. But in fact, it is this. It's basically a kind of nationalism, a kind of chauvinism that regards immigrants, which I should mention in Germany doesn't mean people who migrated to Germany like 5 years ago. This can be people with a Turkish last name whose grandparents arrived in the 1950s as still for them an immigrant, right? It makes them kind of proxies for everything that's going wrong in society. And this is something that, unfortunately, I think politicians very far into the center of German politics actually believe. So there are some head fakes about closed borders that are purely cynical. I think this is genuine. I think they genuinely, it's a fairly homogeneous society that is having real trouble grappling with a newfound diversity and far into preserves where, you know, you would think in a pluralistic society, people would just accept that people move and that's okay. So there's a kind of purely party political dynamic here, which is troubling, but not catastrophic. And then there is, I think, the ethnic component, which is frankly deeply scary.
Yeah. You mentioned populism. I'm thinking about Donald Trump, the sort of the faux populism that plays the card of deporting people, getting rid of immigrants, refugees, etc. But the populism stops at that line. It doesn't talk about actually delivering you know, economic equality, health, education, and all this. Is a similar kind of thing going on in Germany where they feel that people would be satiated by the first move, but not so worried about the second, which here in the United States, we think maybe if they don't come through with the second and more important material part, their power will lessen and maybe the other parties will come into that? Or will the other parties be so far along the faux populism path because they think it's politically successful that those cave in that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's entirely this kind of faux populism, except that unlike in the United States, where I think that faux populism has found a home in one particular wing of one particular party, in Germany, it's unfortunately become suffused across the political spectrum.
Wow.
Not all the way, but far broader than you'd think. I'll give you three examples. The AfD, far-right populists. So you might think, oh, wow, these people hate immigrants, which they do, but also they want to be there for workers or something like that, right? No. The AfD was founded as a party of right-wing econ profs, basically. They have the highest number of PhDs, I think, still among their parliamentary group, meaning these are people who are ultimately sort of Javier Milei fans, but also more racist, right? They in many ways identify the ravages of neoliberalism, but their solution is more and harder neoliberalism.
Yep. Yep.
Meaning the populism, as you say, is absolutely skin deep. Then the CDU, which one should say had a kind of economic populist streak, a Christian economic populism, right? That says it is our duty as Christians to take care of the weakest in society. Obviously, we're going to raise taxes and distribute this to those among the poor who are deserving. And you're like, okay, that's not that great, but at least you're trying to redistribute some money. That's nice. Mm-hmm. That's all gone. The head of the CDU, Friedrich Merz, basically would fly in his private jet to campaign events where he talked about being middle class. And you're like, yeah, real man of the people there, Friedrich. And then there is this weird left-wing creation, which is the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht. So I don't know if you've heard of Sarah Wagenknecht before. She was the most famous politician in the left party, the Linkspartei, so the old post-communists, and broke with her party over what she thought was just lifestyle leftism. These people are all wokesters. Mm. They are not here for working people, et cetera, et cetera. And so she founded her own party whose promise was we're going to get voters back from the AfD with socially conservative but economically progressive ideas.
Wow.
As you can imagine, in the event, they completely forgot about the economic populism and it was all just anti-immigrant shit. So the promise was, oh, we'll be the Danish socialists, basically, but Democrats, and not at all. It just basically became anti-wokeness trolling with, and you name it, right? Turfism and anti-Islam stuff, anti-immigrant stuff. And then every once in a while, like, oh, and also we should probably raise taxes. And like, well, can we hear more about that? No, let's get back to the immigrants. It was extremely, extremely targeted at voters who had once voted or wanted to vote for the AfD, but to give them nominally left-wing alternative. Turns out it didn't work. They fell far behind their own expectations. They did not really draw any voters from the AfD. They appear to have mostly decimated their old party that they'd split from, the Linkspartei. Yeah. But in the rare bit of good news and also comedy in an election that is not rife with either of those two things, the party that Wagenknecht had quit, where everyone thought, oh God, these guys are done for now, doubled its vote share and did extremely well because it turns out a lot of people hadn't voted for them because of her. And we're now quite ready. Oh, you wanted to redistribute wealth and you're nice to immigrants? Sign me up. So they actually did fairly well once she left. Yeah.
This is the Linkspartei?
Linkspartei, yeah.
So they got 8.8 or something like that, right? Tell us about that. Because they've been down in the threes or so for a while, right?
Exactly. Things were just not going their way. They're a largely Eastern party. The AfD is huge in the East, by far the strongest party there by now. And had decimated a lot of their old protest voters. They just all switched over. They lost the only governorship they had late last year. And then they lost this extremely charismatic, does well on TV leader in Sarah Wagenknecht, who, however, had made her specialty just beating up on her own party, which is always an interesting. Yeah. She's one of those Democrats that only show up on Fox News to beat up on Democrats. And you're like, why didn't you just leave? I don't think anyone's chained to them. Why is this happening? Anyway, and so it was understood that, they were polling, as you say, in the threes and fours. There was some scheme they'd cooked up that maybe if they got enough direct votes, if enough of their direct candidates made it into parliament, they could sneak in under a technicality, just to give you a sense of how desperate they were. None of this turned out to be necessary. 8.8 is not amazing, but it's double what even a month ago we thought was possible. They did extremely well. Also, it's not just voters. They've been gaining members. In Germany, you don't just register for a party, you can join it. And people have been pouring into it. And basically, it's very noticeable that as the other parties, including the Greens and the SPD, sort of went in on some kind of AfD light thing. Mm. The Linkspartei was noticeable as just being the opposite. right? They're like, yeah, this, no way, no how. And it turns out there's a constituency for this. And people were like, I'll switch. I'm moving on. The Linkspartei, precisely because it's an Eastern party, has also had a long history of fighting the AfD very actively. Mm-hmm. In 2020, there was a weird attempt to install a new governor in a state with the help from the AfD. It all blew up because Angela Merkel was like, absolutely not. But before that, the head of the parliamentary president, I think, of that state, who was a politician from the Linkspartei, was supposed to congratulate the new governor that just voted in. And she walks over with a bouquet of flowers and just flings it in front of his feet and then turns on her heel and walks off. And this is how they roll. They will not cede an inch to the AfD. Mm-hmm. And it turns out people like that. People think that there have been gigantic protests in Germany against the AfD for over a year now. There is a big constituency for this. The Linkspartei was very successful in tapping into it. And the really shocking thing is that a lot of the other parties really seem to not take those people particularly seriously. Yeah. They don't seem to think that these are people that are worth representing. They're not people who, we know this from the United States, right? They're not worth listening to. They're the ones who you have to throw under the bus in order to get the voters that really matter.
Exactly.
And the Linkspartei was the one that says, no, these voters matter to us and we think we can reach them. Our big issues are going to be that rents are rising too fast and we're going to try and make that better. We're going to try to be serious about how to attack inflation in a way that's populist, but also really changes people's lives materially, knocked on people's doors, listened. And instead of telling people, like, the thing you're afraid of is immigrants, we're just like, no, what is your actual problem? And it turns out that it was worth, again, like, they didn't win this election, but they really are one of the rare sort of non-Nazi success stories in this.
Yeah. When you were speaking, I was thinking about what happened in France when they tried to lower the retirement age, right? Or heighten it. Could you talk, you mentioned it briefly, but let's dig into it a bit more, demographics. What's the electorate body these days in Germany? How do you see it generationally fleshing out, and also in terms of gender? If you find the same kinds of things as we did here in the United States in terms of Trump voters, for example.
Yeah, the gender gap is not as huge unless you overlay it also with age, right? Mm. The AfD does most poorly actually with very old. This is not necessarily because people there are more liberal or left-leaning. It's got to do with the fact that they've always voted for the same party and they're not switching. So there's less movement there. These are people who voted, let's say, for the CDU for the last 50 years. It would take something pretty extraordinary to get them to switch their vote. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, it might be, we've had so many elections recently, right? The European election and then a couple of regional elections. My recollection is basically that it's people my age, people in their 30s and 40s, who are the ones who've swung most heavily towards the AfD, with young people unfortunately providing very little counterbalance. Like, the AfD does not outperform among young people, but it also doesn't underperform quite. Like, that's where it's different from the United States, where Trump really did poorly with young Americans, and certain, especially young women. The AfD does poorly with young women in Germany, we know that, and it does well with older men, right? So there is some of this, but it's not as stark as it is, I would say, in the US, where the gender gap, I forget what it was in November, but it was fairly significant. So there is this kind of gendered division. One should say, my suspicion is that part of this has to do also with geographics. So the AfD started as an East German phenomenon. Now it has direct mandates, so wins congressional districts outright in West Germany. We used to say it's entirely a rural party or suburban party. It now can win in certain major cities, not Hamburg, not Berlin, not Munich, but cities of 200,000, 300,000 people. Yeah, they can start contesting those. Still, I think the overall profile is still fairly clear. They clean up in areas in which basically the age profile and the gender profile are fairly tilted. That is to say, that have deficits in both young people and young women specifically, was a process that started in East Germany and rural East Germany, where women above all moved away, and then has by now taken hold of large parts of ex-urban, or however you want to call it, like ex-metropolitan German, West Germany as well. It's not to say that's the only places they do well, but that's where they clean up. The town of 40 to 60,000 people where the industry is dead, and anyone who's anything wants to leave town, that's where they can really run up like 30%, 35%. I don't think 40% is in there yet, but like it's damn close in some places. That tends to be the places where they really dominate the landscape at this point.
If you were going to predict or advise politically for the next several months, what do you think is going to happen? In other words, part of it is because, again, I have this image of what's happening to the left here with Trump and Musk destroying the government, destroying democracy, wrecking the economy. And you think the Democratic Party should, instead of rushing to the center, and should be an authentically populist party like it was way, way back then. What do you think is going to happen, and what would be needed to stem this a little bit?
It's really tricky. There's a really wonderful Substack piece I read about this. It's unfortunately only in German, where a journalist for Der Spiegel pointed out the real problem is that ultimately we can yell about the data all we want. Mm. The question is, how does Friedrich Merz and how does the CDU read its own results, right? Because 28.5% is better than their last result, but it's bad, right? So there are two possible readings. One member of the CDU, a former German president, in fact, came out the day after the election and said, look, actually did poorly. It's good that we won, but we did poorly. And I think it's because we tried to be the far right, but we're not. I think we need to get back to sort of Angela Merkel-style centrism. Mm-hmm. That was his pitch. It's very clear that Friedrich Merz, who is constitutionally incapable of ever admitting having been wrong, sees it the opposite way. He thinks, oh, there was no real downside to moving far to the right, and maybe I should have done more of it. Maybe I should have gone, I don't know, full fascist or something like that. Yeah. And then maybe I would have gotten to 30% or whatever. And the problem is, of course, everything depends on who wins out in the end. And in some way, the other parties have to make the same self-assessment. And many of them are not, I think, set up to be honest about their numbers and say, look, clearly this doesn't work. Now, any political scientist listening will be pulling their hair out because this has been tried in other countries, France, Austria, et cetera, et cetera. Center parties that try to ape the far get eaten alive. It is it is as close to an iron law of politics as there exists in the 21st century.
Yeah.
But somehow, like, people's careers and self-perception are bound up with this. And the other problematic party in this is the German press. The AfD has been putting candidates to parliament that, frankly, are terrifying, right? Literally, 20 years ago, wouldn't have been allowed anywhere near a parliament, right? Mm-hmm. Like the way that we have January 6th conspirators now walking around the Capitol building, basically like that, right? And yet, the media is surprisingly mum on this stuff. Their big foci since the election have been immigrants. Are they dangerous? Still somehow beating that dead horse. And the other thing that they've been going on about is, look at those weirdos from the left party. The left had, it's true, they had a somewhat shallow bench. They thought they were going to get creamed, right?
Yeah.
So they didn't have enough candidates to fill, and so they're scrambling. But so now you get these headlines about Hamas members in, which is like code for this person is Arabic, but like in parliament because of the left party. And if you look into it, like very little of it holds any water, but it is this thing, right? Like it's the same way that since the election in the United States, I feel like there is a part of the chattering class that's just like, so do we throw trans people under the bus now or what, right? And as you say, or you could just make people's lives better and stop going in for weird right-wing culture wars. Oh, I think we're going to do the trans thing. This is exactly what's happening there, that in some way the media, unfortunately, have fully arrived. The Overton window is where the AfD wants it, and the media is only very hesitantly trying to adjust it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do think that some, or many members of the media, frankly, are doing that in a form of working towards an AfD government. I don't think that these are people who would vote for the AfD, but they're thinking they might need to do their job under an AfD government in 4 years. And so they're going to get ready by parroting the dumbass talking points of the far right rather than investigating what these people are really all about. And so it's much more left-baiting campaigns. It's much more look at these freaks as opposed to, should we maybe look at the 150 people from the AfD that are going to enter parliament?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be about this one dude from a heavily Palestinian area of Berlin that you're going to be fixating on? And so I'm very worried. It's a little bit like Trump 2 versus Trump 1, right? Trump 1, I feel like, was a all-out assault on American democracy with a bunch of institutions in the United States that turned out to have a surprising amount of fight in them, right? Courts, the press, and the Democratic Party, we all thought were dead, but they suddenly kicked alive and were like, oh, we can actually be real pains in the ass for these people. Second time around, I feel like all these people are falling all over themselves. It's just like it's not happening. And that's what I see happening in Germany. There is a kind of advance capitulation to a government that it seems very unlikely that the AfD is going to enter the actual government this time.
Yeah.
I was worried about that. It doesn't really seem like it. It's going to be the SPD and the CDU creating some kind of cobbled together Frankenstein monster. Seems that's what's going to happen. But the problem is that the safeguards of civil society are no longer there, or they're severely damaged and not up to the task.
Yeah.
Maybe to give you one final example of this.
Yeah.
So one of the big checks on this word lurch have been these big protests, where really millions of people have taken to the streets and have expressed their critiques of the AfD, but also their criticisms of the CDU for running after these guys, saying, wait, this is not what democratic parties should do. The CDU has now decided that those are basically paid protesters, right? Financed by international NGOs. And the reason why that matters is that's how Viktor Orban talks about people who protest against him, right? So they're very clearly already starting to crib from the playbook of far-right autocrats across Europe. Now, it's not to say that they are a far-right autocratic party, but it is to say you can see where the undertow is going, right? There was a way, and there are people in the CDU that would probably say, yes, if people tell you month after month, don't do this, maybe we should listen to them. There are people in the CDU saying that, but there are others who are like, look at these paid Soros protesters. Look at the deep state that's like trying to thwart us, et cetera. We should be like more like Elon Musk, right? And you're like, shit. Like you have fully arrived within the illiberal international.
Right? Yeah. I'm just thinking about the spin that the liberal media is putting out saying, we didn't lose the popular vote by much.
Yeah.
You
know?
And then you get your umpteenth text from Hakeem Jeffries, who wants to say, just $5, David, that's all we need more from you. But then what we have now is incredible. We have Jeff Bezos telling the op-ed people in the Washington Post, you will not speak ill of the free market system. It's un-American. And I think that today is the day of the national economic boycott. We have Tesla takedowns going all over. I think it's awakened something. I think there was a lull with people regrouping. It's gotten to be so awful, especially when you shut down NIH. I mean, the forestry service, these hit really close to a lot of people's hearts, and they're not culture war attachable.
Yeah.
So last question I wanted to ask you. So here we have J.D. Vance in Germany, and there are all sorts of people defending Germany against him, supposedly. But what do you think the impact is of having Trump as president in Germany in terms of these elections and the future?
Yeah, to be honest, I, for a brief moment, entertained the hope that this whole thing would blow up in their face. That is to say, there is a kind of knee-jerk anti-Americanism in a lot of Europe. And the idea of the vice president of the United States quite so publicly humiliating your own country would seem, especially for right-leaning voters, to be a little bit of a bridge too far. I don't think that's borne out by the election results. And I think there are two possibilities why that might be. One is low information, right? People are by now so ensconced in their own media ecosystem that they may simply not have known what J.D. Vance said, or it was too late. They'd already basically been drip-fed anti-immigrant content for 2 years. What the hell was one J.D. Vance speech going to do? So that's one possibility. And the other possibility is the one that I think we saw. I mean, we're recording this on for your listeners on February 28th, that we saw today in the White House. Right, with Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky, which is that these nationalists don't seem to like their nations that much anymore. They seem they seem to take a certain kind of joy in seeing what they perceive to be elites brought down a peg. And it almost doesn't matter to them that like their lives will be worse, materially worse, that they've been insulted as a collectivity. Like that's not a collectivity that they believe themselves to be part of. They think that most of the people that they're being told are German are to them not Germans. The same way that most Trump voters don't think, you know, that many people east of the Allegheny and west of, I don't know, Oakland, basically, or not even, what am I saying, west of Stockton, basically, are Americans at all. Yeah. And I think there's this kind of almost joyful self-destructiveness that I think might have an easy time accommodating the kind of the really brutal and mean-spirited critiques of a J.D. Vance and inaccurate critiques. And I might just be like, yeah, it's what I read on X as well, right? Mm. And this is fully reflected in the AI slop that my algorithm keeps feeding me and that I have now built my entire worldview around. And so I do think that's the real problem here, that in some way, as in the United States, you get the impression that the people who want to preserve the institutions or do better than preserve the institutions, but turn those institutions into tools for making people's lives materially better, those people ultimately are playing for a shrinking part of the electorate. Like, it still exists. There's still a constituency for this, but there are just people who are unreachable. And I think that the J.D. Vance imbroglio basically showed that. To give you a little bit of a comparative data point, when Gerhard Schroeder was in trouble early in, I think, 2002, 2003, right, he told George W. Bush that the Germans wouldn't go into Iraq, and it became this huge blow up.
Oh, yeah.
And it gave him a very solid bump in the polls. He had shown that he was strong. He'd shown that he was independent. He'd shown those Americans who was boss. Like, you can imagine a kind of low information voter who likes that and finds that very, it was manly and all that stuff. And here it is helping him out. There could have been, so structurally, a very similar effect in response to J.D. Vance's speech. And if there was, it was minuscule and it left almost no trace in the polls.
My ray of hope is the No Kings. It's not even a movement. It's a good slogan.
It's
popping up in red states. And it comes down to the material realities. Inflation's rampant.
Yep.
Things are going to only get worse. They're taking away Medicaid. And these are things that can't be, again, swept away by immigrant bashing. There's no way to attach that blame to immigrants. It is solely the Elon Musk.
Yeah. Your word in God's ear, right? So that's the question, right? Is it going to get bad enough that they can't? There's a political scientist at Princeton, Jan-Werner Müller, who points this out, that basically the moment right-wing populists are in charge, nothing works, right? They're actually very bad at their job. But what they do is offer constant sort of conspiracy stories as to why their actually laudable intentions, right? This was the whole deep state story about Trump won, right? Many Trumpers understood on an instinctual level, they're like, that was a shit show, what just happened. While it was the deep state, it was this, and while it was probably the Jews in some way, because with those people, it's like, that
they're everywhere.
you're gonna end up with blaming the Jews at some point, right? So I think that's the other risk here, that basically that, yes, people will understand that something's going terribly wrong, and then it's a question of which narrative wins out. I do agree with you that there have to be limits to what people can be made to believe. But then if you've ever seen or read interviews with citizens of the Russian Federation,
exactly.
I think, my Lord, what this guy did to these people and then told them it was actually about. That is the capacity of people to process or to close their eye to cognitive dissonance is apparently tremendous. And so let's hope that it finds... that this kind of populism finds its the right target, and that they can't figure out some kind of target of convenience. Because if for another reason that you and I will be very high on the top of that list of scapegoats, and I don't know, I don't want to ride out the 2020s as someone's scapegoat.
Well,
exhausting.
I know you have to go. I can't thank you enough for sharing time with us and dispensing all this wisdom and insight. But we will have you on in a year or sooner to figure out what's transpired since this timestamp, star date, whatever it is. Thank you so much, Adrian.
Thank you, David.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.